is VOA News via remote. I'm Laurel Bowman. It's official. 15 countries have formed the world's largest trading bloc. The Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership deal was signed Sunday on the sidelines of a virtual summit of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, which this year was hosted by Vietnam. The new partnership is made up of 10 Southeast Asian countries, as well as South Korea, China, Japan, Australia, and New Zealand. The deal is seen as extending China's influence in the region and excludes the U.S., which withdrew from a similar Asia-Pacific trade pact in 2017. Leaders hope the move will help spur recovery from the havoc wreaked by the coronavirus pandemic. It came after 8 years of negotiations. The leader of the Tigray region of Ethiopia on Sunday claimed responsibility for rocket strikes targeting the airport in neighboring Eritrea, a move that heightened fears of a wider conflict in the Horn of Africa. Meantime, around 25,000 Ethiopians fleeing the conflict have crossed into neighboring Sudan, the state news agency SUNA reported. The UN said it was working to find them shelter. All this comes days after Amnesty International reported a massacre in the Tigray region with weapons, including machetes, with witnesses pointing to the Tigrayans. And questions abound as to whether Eritrea is supporting Ethiopia in the north of Africa's second most populous country. The Nobel Prize-winning leader of Ethiopia says his country can defend itself. Peru's Congress opened a crisis session on Sunday amid growing pressure on the country's interim president, Manuel Merino, to resign after a violent crackdown on protests left 3 people dead. And for more on these and other international stories, we're inviting you to visit our website at voanews.com. This is VOA News. Storm Vamco slammed into Vietnam on Sunday, damaging buildings and injuring at least 5 people as the death toll in the Philippines climbed to 67. The storm made landfall Sunday morning with reported winds of up to 90 kilometers per hour, uprooting trees and blowing the roofs off houses and schools. Vamco is the latest in a series of storms that have pummeled Vietnam over the past 6 weeks, causing flooding and landslides that have killed at least 159 people and left 70 others missing. Vamco has weakened since hitting the Philippines as a typhoon with winds of up to 155 kilometers per hour, but state media said it had still caused significant damage. Vamco was the deadliest storm to hit the Philippines this year, killing again at least 67 people across the main island of Luzon in recent days and affecting some 1.7 million people across the country. And here are some of the other news headlines from around the world today. Mexico registers more than 1 million cases of coronavirus as its death toll edges towards 100,000. The country has the world's fourth highest death toll. The neighboring United States has the highest. Some 635 more people died Saturday, bringing the total to over 98,000, with experts warning the worst is yet to come. Romania checks all its intensive care units after 10 COVID-19 patients die in a fire in a hospital in a northeastern city. 7 others are in critical condition after the blaze, the worst in the Balkan country since a 2015 disco fire that killed 64. Brazilians vote in municipal elections, the first polls since President Jair Bolsonaro came to power in 2018, with the pandemic looming large. Like U.S. President Donald Trump, the far-right former army captain has tried to downplay the virus, calling it a little flu. Yet, over 165,000 Brazilians have died, the worst toll outside the United States. Germany is facing 4 to 5 more months of restrictions, its economy minister said, dashing hopes of a quick end to its partial lockdown. The minister told a German newspaper that the infection numbers are still far too high, much higher even than a fortnight ago. The United Arab Emirates is granting all doctors and infectious disease experts living in the country a 10-year visa. Students who get top grades in epidemiology and artificial intelligence could also get what's called a golden visa. For more on these stories, please visit our website at voanews.com. Via remote, Laurel Bowman, VOA News.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
The international community supports the dictator, that is, to leave Ivory Coast in civil war. And let me tell you, it is time now to stop that bad joke and bad game, that tragedy. It is time to stop it by supporting the rule of law in Ivory Coast.
The African Union and ECOWAS come under criticism for congratulating President Alassane Ouattara for winning Ivory Coast election.
It has been helpful to us as a commission. The information that they gather on the ground and they bring it to our attention so that we are able to attend to it.
The Electoral Commission of Zambia is compiling a voter list for next year's general election.
We are engaging the regional bodies, the international community, on the necessary steps to be taken against the illegitimate government in Tanzania and in Zanzibar.
And a major Tanzanian opposition party demands fresh elections and an independent inquiry over allegations of police crackdown on opponents of the administration. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. William Soro, a former Ivorian prime minister, is expressing disappointment with the African Union and the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, a regional bloc. This after the two organizations congratulated President Alassane Ouattara on his victory during the recent election. Soro and other opposition members say it was inappropriate for the two organizations to approve what they say is the gross violation of the Constitution. The Constitution allows only 2 5 full-year terms. However, Mr. Ouattara maintains he was eligible to contest in the poll, which he won. The president has since called for a national dialogue to resolve the country's challenges. Soro and other opponents of the administration have so far refused to participate in the planned talks. Professor Franklin Nyamsi teaches at Rouen University in France and is an advisor to Guillaume Soro. He tells me that Soro is disappointed in both the African Union and ECOWAS. He also says their stamp of approval could plunge Ivory Coast into chaos and instability, which could spill over into neighboring countries.
He is disappointed because those congratulations do not respect the constitution of Cote d'Ivoire, and they do not respect even international justice in Africa. As you probably know, the African Court of Justice has publicly condemned Mr. Ouattara's government, asking Mr. Ouattara's government to put the names of President Soro Gbagbo in the electoral list and to allow them to run for the presidential election. And the same court has condemned that government of Mr. Ouattara for not respecting equality consensus in the organization of the electoral process. So how can the African Union court condemn a government for not respecting democratic principles? And on the other hand, we have ECOWAS and the president of the African Union Commission, Mr. Mahamat Faki, who are congratulating the dictator.
What can he do as a member of the opposition coalition to right this wrong that he says has been done to the country Ivory Coast and its people? What can he do?
The only way and the only path for freedom in Africa, like everywhere in the world, is that the people itself must be involved in the process of emancipation by civil and pacific disobedience. This is the way, this is the decision of the world opposition and of the majority of the Ivorian people, is that Mr. Ouattara is no more the president-elect in Ivory Coast because he has no rights constitutionally to be candidate. And on October 31st, there was no election. Do you think that an so-called election where there was less than 10% of participation level of the electoral population can be considered like an event representing the democratic process? No.
The president is also calling for dialogue between the opposition
and his government to resolve any concerns that you might have. Will you attend or be part of the dialogue?
This dialogue is not open for now because Mr. Ouattara has not respected 9 conditions for a true political dialogue. There are more than 1,000 people in prison, political prisoners. There are many Ivorian political leaders who are still in political exile, like President Soro, President Gbagbo, and many important political leaders after them. There are many false names of citizens in the electoral list, and there is no electoral consensual list in Ivory Coast. The electoral commission is not fair. It is under Mr. Ouattara's control. The Constitutional Council is not fair at all. It is under Mr. Ouattara's control. The 7 magistrates of that council are under Mr. Ouattara's control. The process of political democracy in Cote d'Ivoire is now stopped by killings. More than 100 people have been killed in Cote d'Ivoire by Mr. Ouattara's militia. We need an independent inquiry to punish those who are killed, those more than 100 Ivorians. So there are so many conditions to respect before opening the true political dialogue.
So moving forward, what do you think can resolve what many opposition people are calling the crisis in Ivory Coast?
The first thing to do is to call all the political parties, all the political groups, and all the political leaders to respect the constitution. ECOWAS, African Union, the United Nations, and all the great democracies through the world must support the constitutional order. And clearly, Mr. Ouattara is against the constitutional order. If the Ivorian people is not supported by all the international organizations, by all the international community, to see its own constitution be respected by all the political leaders, that is a way to abandon Cote d'Ivoire to civil war. Because this country is now still in civil war. More than 100 people have been killed in less than 3 months. So if the Ivorian opposition is not understood, if the international community supports the dictator, that is to leave Ivory Coast in civil war. And let me think, it is time now to stop that bad joke, that bad game, that tragedy. It is time to stop it by supporting the rule of law in Ivory Coast.
Professor Franklin Nyamsi teaches at Rouen University in France and is an advisor to Guillaume Soro. He spoke with me from the French capital, Paris. Zambia's Electoral Commission says it is pleased with the progress of the ongoing voter registration process. This as the electoral body compiles a list to be used in next year's general election. But some opposition and civil society groups have expressed concern about problems prospective voters have been facing in parts of the country. Some opposition figures, including Tshishimba Kambwili, leader of the opposition National Democratic Congress, or NDC, are calling for an extension of the registration period. This, they argue, will enable the electoral body to have enough time to resolve any challenges during the registration process. Sylvia Bualia is the spokesperson for the Electoral Commission of Zambia. She tells me that the organization continues to work with all stakeholders, including the political parties, to address their concerns before the conclusion of the voter list.
Well, we launched the voter registration exercise on the 9th of November. That is on Monday. And since we launched the exercise, we've got a lot of people that are coming to register as voters. I think that our members of the public have been very enthusiastic about registering to vote. So the commission is very happy, and we also want to just thank everyone that has turned up in large numbers to go to the registration centers and leaving their busy schedules to go and register as voters.
When will the voter registration process end? How many prospective voters are you targeting?
Okay, first of all, we have 3 platforms through which someone can register. We have an online voter pre-registration. This is a platform where people have to, or eligible Zambians have to submit their details.
It's not an end-to-end in itself, because even if one has pre-registered online, they are still required to go to a physical registration center to complete their registration and obtain their voter's card. Then we have static voter registration, which is based at centers at district level, which are not mobile. These ones will be open throughout the registration period from the time we opened on the 9th of November to the 12th of December. Then we also have mobile voter registration, which is in phases. So we have the first phase where registration officers stay at one particular center for at least 7 days before they move to the next registration center.
What are some of the challenges you face in the ongoing process, particularly concerns raised by stakeholders, including political parties, so far?
Some of the concerns that our stakeholders have raised is the duration that they are spending at the registration centers due to the large number of people that have shown up to register as voters. And so the commission has taken into account some of these concerns. And in addressing these issues, the commission has started deploying additional staff to the registration centers to help in making sure that the registration of voters is efficiently done, so that's quickly expedited. And we are still watching the situation, and as issues are being reported, the Electoral Commission is making sure that we resolve those issues, because another thing that we have heard is that persons with disabilities, expectant mothers and the elderly, they have been left in the queues for a long time. And so the commission has appealed to, or given guidance to, the registration officers to make sure that they give priority to expectant mothers, the elderly and persons with disabilities. They put them at the front of the queue, because this has been the practice for the Electoral Commission, even during elections and other electoral activities.
So far that you have been trying to address the concerns of the political parties and other stakeholders, how has been their reaction in terms of working with you to resolve their concerns?
Well, I think they are also closely monitoring what is going on the ground, and somehow they are reporting cases that they find on the ground, and in that way they are bringing some of the issues to our attention. Yeah, so that's the way that it has been helpful to us as a commission, the information that they gather on the ground, and they bring it to our attention so that we are able to attend to it.
Sylvia Bwalya is the spokesperson for the Electoral Commission of Zambia. She spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka.
Tanzania's opposition party, ACT Wazalendo, is calling on the African Union to form a team of former African leaders and eminent persons to investigate recent elections in the East African country. The party has also officially petitioned the Commonwealth of Nations to pressure the administration to stop what the party calls a continued crackdown on opponents. This after opposition groups rejected the outcome of last month's general election, citing voter irregularities and rigging. The parties are also demanding fresh elections after criticizing the Electoral Commission of bias, an accusation the electoral body denies. To learn more about the demand for fresh elections and petition to several international organizations about the alleged crackdown on government opponents, I reached Zitto Kabwe, leader of ACT Wazalendo, in the Tanzanian commercial capital, Dar es Salaam.
We wrote in response to the preliminary report that the Commonwealth issued on the Tanzanian election, but also we reached out to the African Union, because the African Union sent the observer mission here and they observed the irregularities that took place in Tanzania. In real sense, there was no election. And they have witnessed the crackdown that has happened. So we have written to the Secretary General of the Commonwealth and the chairperson of the African Union Commission to ask them to conduct an independent objective investigation, but also he have asked the African Union to establish a panel of eminent personalities to, one, investigate, but secondly, to see on how to oversee the new elections that have to be called after the investigations on the irregularities that took place.
Bazito, some supporters of the CCM argue that the allegations of voter irregularities that you were talking about were small and isolated and will not necessarily have any impact regarding the overall outcome of the election, and that President John Magufuli won the election fair and square, and that his vote count was majority. So what you are doing in terms of letter writing to these organizations will not change anything on the ground. How do you respond to that?
The electoral irregularities were widespread across the country. The real turnout is below 30%, but because of the staffed ballot, it went to 50%. So it means 50% of the votes that were counted, 20% of the votes that were counted, 20% more above 30% to make it 50%, were ghost votes. A mere fact that only 30% of the population went to cast their votes is a clear sign of their mistrust to the government and the electoral system. And this has been well documented. So those CCM supporters should accept the investigation in order to prove their point that the irregularities were not widespread.
Zito, what do you say to supporters of the CCM who are of the view that it is the opposition figures, including yourself, including Tundu Lissu, who are creating unnecessary tension and seeking to destabilize the country, and that the police are only doing their job to maintain law and order?
Those are what we call blame the victim, because we're the ones who are being persecuted. We're the ones who are reporting to police every 3 days. So it is utter rubbish arguing that we are the ones destabilizing the country. How are we going to destabilize the country? We do not have instruments that the ruling party has. We do not have the police. We do not have the army. We do not have the security services. Those are, as I said before, what we call blame the victim. The electoral process was a farce. It was a sham. And we demand that investigations be done. If they are sure that it was clear, it was clean, why are they avoiding the investigation that we are calling for?
So, Zito, what is the next line of action for your party? And are you in coordination with other opposition parties with similar line of thought or ideologies about your next line of action regarding this fight to have the outcome of the results rejected by other international organizations?
We have called in a coordinated way the demonstrations since November the 2nd. The demonstrations were prevented by the heavy police presence. But that doesn't mean that the demonstrations will not happen. They will happen. We are engaging the regional bodies, the international community, on the necessary steps to be taken against the illegitimate government in Tanzania and in Zanzibar. And we are in discussions to think about other steps that we need to take. But struggle continues. Aluta continue.
Zito Kabwe is the leader of the Tanzanian opposition party, ACT Wazalendo. He spoke with me from the commercial capital, Dar es Salaam. Still in Tanzania, the Mothers Union of the Anglican Church is undertaking a campaign to educate poor people and the physically challenged to protect themselves from the coronavirus. Margaret Ndonde Masawa, Mothers Union Provincial Coordinator for Tanzania, says the group has also stepped up efforts to engage more Tanzanians in a bid to reduce the spread of the disease. This, despite criticisms that the government in Dodoma has not been forthcoming with reports on the rate of infection of the disease. Margaret Ndonde Masawa, Mothers Union Provincial Coordinator for Tanzania, spoke with me about the virus. She told me that her organization is working with other stakeholders to educate the public on measures to protect themselves from the coronavirus.
The Mothers Union in Tanzania, with the good collaboration of the General Secretary of the Anglican Church of Tanzania, were able to raise awareness on COVID-19 in all Anglican Church of Tanzania dioceses as well in the community to help to prevent the spread of disease of COVID-19. By the God's grace, we were able to provide messages by using the following ways. We prepared topics on COVID-19, and prevention of disease, and sending to all heads of dioceses for them to relay the messages to the congregation.
How has been the response of those that you have contacted about the education to sensitize them about the coronavirus in Tanzania?
They accepted the messages. Also, they tried to live by following the instruction which we have given by using our topics. We prepared posters and banners concerning the prevention of the spread of the COVID-19. The posters were given to the people and some were put in the different areas for people to see and learn about prevention on the disease. Also, we printed t-shirts with the messages about COVID-19 prevention. Message was Tanzania bila corona inawezekana jikinge na COVID-19. We distributed buckets for washing hands, hand wash and hand sanitizers to certain centers and parishes. We trained 44 workers of the head office and centers of the Anglican Church of Tanzania as TOT in order to reach more people with the message of COVID-19 prevention. We trained 15 Mothers Union coordinators from 15 dioceses and 5 zone coordinators from all 5 zones for them to deliver message on COVID-19 to 233 Mothers Union Vicobas groups in a Blackett Village Community Banks. 4,096 people were reached. Poor elders and disabled people were also reached. Some people who were affected from leprosy who were living at Skovahela in Singida region were given the message on COVID-19 and also the food, hand sanitizers, and masks. We were able to reach 500 people. Also, we thank God that our president and church leaders asked Tanzanians to trust in God by prayer and to take care for following all instruction was given by WHO and our government.
Is the government helping you as you educate Tanzanians about the dangers of COVID?
Yes, the government has helped me to provide the message on COVID-19. As I said, we worked with the people who are disabled people in the village of Sukamahela. We are working together with the Member of Parliament and local government leaders. So they agree, they have given me permission to work with the communities. Because as a church, we are dealing with the different issues.
What are some of the problems or misconceptions that you get when you visit these communities to teach them about COVID-19? Do they say it doesn't exist?
When I was providing the message on COVID-19, they were agreed that the problem was there. That is why they accepted. They were using the sanitizers and washing their hands and taking care as they instructed by government. That is why people were fighting to shake their hands, hugging, even to sit near with other people. Some of the people there were afraid to go in the church. They are just worshiping to their homes. But we thank God now we are okay, but we are still taking the precaution. Another problem was poorest people were not able to afford to get sanitizers, buckets, and soap for making them to be safely. But we thank God that Mothers Union, when you went there, we provided that tools for making them to be safely.
Margaret Ndondi Masawa is the Mothers Union Provincial Coordinator for Tanzania. She spoke with me from the capital, Dodoma. This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, sports with Douglas Mpuga and music from our African collection. But first, the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, along with the Standard Bank and other partners, plan to host the annual South African Investment Conference in New York beginning Monday. Organizers say the two-day conference will showcase development in the country's economic landscape with international investors. This year's conference will be virtual due to the ongoing global coronavirus pandemic. South Africa's economy has been significantly impacted by the disease, which also forced the government to impose movement restrictions to limit the spread of the disease. Lungisa Fuzeli, the CEO of Standard Bank in South Africa, is scheduled to speak at the conference. I reached him and asked him why he thinks South Africa will attract North American investors despite concerns of corruption.
South Africa happens to be situated on the African continent, obvious point. A population of 1 billion, so to speak, on the continent as a whole. So establishing shop in South Africa for any international investor first gives them access to the infrastructure that South Africa has, physical infrastructure, that is, the financial system that is very sound and strong, very well regulated, a currency that is highly traded and very liquid, that allows people to come in here and go out effortlessly without too much problems. But at the same time, because Africa has got a developmental deficit, so to speak, and has got a young population, it makes huge sense for investors to come here, locate business here, and expand into the continent. That is what many corporates have done. International corporates, so to speak. That is what South African corporates have done, including our own bank, which operates in about 20 countries on the continent.
One of the issues analysts have expressed concern about is graft or corruption in both public and private institutions. How is the private organizations in South Africa, including your bank, handling this issue to make it attractive for investors?
It's true that South Africa definitely does face the problem of graft. Not so long ago, we saw the Secretary General of the ANC, a very senior person in the organization, probably the second or third most powerful person in the African National Congress, the governing party, being charged. And many other people have been charged. So clearly, the efforts of the state to push back, to deal with the corruption, graft quite decisively are beginning to show. The courts exercise their role with utmost impartiality, no fear, no favor, and that is very welcome. So any investor who comes to South Africa can rest assured that whatever contract they enter into, they will be able to enforce it through the court system if needs be.
What role do you think your bank can particularly play to attract investors to South Africa?
Standard Bank takes pride in being an African bank that has got headquarters in South Africa, but operates in about 20 jurisdictions on the continent. And we are one of the most diversified financial services businesses on the continent, offering the widest range of products and services. So, in addition to hosting events such as South Africa Tomorrow, where we bring together policymakers, regulators, national or domestic investors, and international investors together to talk about the South African economy, the prospects that it offers, and of course, more broadly, the interconnections between South Africa and the continent in which it is situated, capital flowing from all law-abiding jurisdictions across the globe.
Do you think South Africa's prevailing economic conditions are conducive enough that you think will be an attractive mechanism for foreign investors, particularly those in North America?
I have got no doubt that even though impacted quite severely by COVID, which found South Africa already battling economically, South Africa still offers investors, domestic and international, one of the best opportunities for the variety of reasons that I've already mentioned, the good infrastructure, strong financial system that's very sound, and of course, the attention that government is paying to improving the ease of doing business does mean that South Africa is offering a very good value proposition.
Lungisa Fuzili is the CEO of Standard Bank South Africa. He spoke with me from Johannesburg. United Nations aid agencies report Ethiopia's northern Tigray province is in a worsening humanitarian crisis as fighting intensifies and thousands continue to flee to neighboring countries. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
Protection of Ethiopian civilians and Eritrean refugees is a major concern, with human rights monitors warning the week-long fighting between Ethiopian federal forces and Tigray regional security forces could spin out of control. The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs says humanitarian aid to more than 2 million people in the region has been disrupted. It says security concerns are preventing food, health supplies, and other relief from being delivered. Baba Baloch, a spokesman for UNHCR, the UN refugee agency, says the safety of tens of thousands of Eritrean refugees who are living in camps near the conflict zone is at risk.
Meanwhile, services for 96,000 Eritrean refugees inside Tigray have been seriously disrupted, with reports of growing number of Ethiopians themselves becoming displaced internally.
Aid agencies say general living and operating conditions inside Tigray are becoming more difficult. They report power outages and say food and fuel supplies are becoming increasingly scarce. In addition, communications have been cut off, creating an information blackout. Baloch says growing insecurity and lack of humanitarian assistance are driving an increasing number of people to flee across borders in search of safety. He says more than 14,500 refugees, half of them children, have arrived in Sudan. He adds many more are on their way.
People are arriving with very few belongings, indicating they fled in a hurry. Arriving children are exhausted and are scared. UNHCR and our partners are ramping up assistance, but the numbers of new arrivals are outpacing the capacity on the ground.
Baloch says Sudanese authorities have approved establishment of a new refugee camp to accommodate the growing number of new arrivals. He notes the camp, which can host up to 20,000 people, is 80 kilometers from the border. He says additional sites are being identified. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Douglas Mpuga. Hello, Douglas.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. After almost a year without competitive African international football, the African Cup of Nations qualifying campaign kicked off on Wednesday. African champions Algeria extended the unbeaten run to 21 matches on Thursday in Algiers with a 3-1 win over Zimbabwe. The result means Algeria have won all three of their Group H matches and are 5 points clear at the top of the standings. Zambia beat Botswana 2-1. Zambia, who won the title in 2012, are now back in contention in Algeria's group after getting their first points of the qualifying campaign. Ghana also made it 3-3 with a 2-0 win over Sudan. Ivory Coast beat Madagascar 2-1 at the new Alassane Ouattara Stadium in Abidjan. Arsenal captain Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang scored for Gabon, guiding his nation to a crucial 2-1 victory over Group D rivals at the Gambia. Cameroon beat Mozambique 4-1 as Cape Verde drew with Rwanda 0-0. Congo-Brazzaville beat Eswatini 2-0. Uganda and Burkina Faso both edged towards qualification on Thursday with contrasting wins in Group B. Uganda beat South Sudan 1-0 in Kampala, while Burkina Faso beat Malawi 3-1 in Ouagadougou. On Wednesday, Equatorial Guinea beat Libya 3-2. Guinea beat Chad 1-0. Kenya drew with Comoros 1-1. Mauritania drew with Burundi 1-1. And Senegal beat Guinea-Bissau 2-0. On Friday, Sierra Leone fought back from 4-0 down away to Nigeria to draw 4-4 in Benin City. It was one of the six qualifying group fixtures on Friday for the finals, which will now take place in Cameroon in 2022. In other matches, Morocco beat Central African Republic 4-1. South Africa needed the spot kick to help avoid embarrassment against Sao Tome and Principe, a country with a population of just 200,000 and ranked 182nd in world football. South Africa eventually prevailed 2-0. Penalties also proved decisive in Friday's other Africa Cup of Nations qualifiers, with Tunisia beating Tanzania 1-0 to lead Group J with 9 points. Mali joined Guinea at the top of Group A after their 1-0 home win over Namibia in Bamako. Niger beat Ethiopia 1-0 in Niamey. Niger and Ethiopia are both on 3 points in Group K, behind the top two, Ivory Coast and Madagascar, who are both on 6 points. Meanwhile, Madagascar's Ahmad has temporarily relinquished control of the Confederation of African Football presidency, citing health reasons, 2 days after leaving hospital with coronavirus. CAF's first vice president, Constant Omari, will take charge until the end of November as the 60-year-old continues his recovery. In athletics, Kenya's former world 1500 meters champion Elijah Munangoi has been suspended for 2 years for failing to make himself available for 3 drug tests. The Athletics Integrity Unit says the ban is backdated to December 22nd of 2019. The 27 Marangoi won silver the 2015 Beijing World Championships before taking gold in London 2 years later. And the Athletics Integrity Unit has appealed against the decision to dismiss anti-doping charges against world 400 meters champion Salwa Eid Nasser. The Bahraini was provisionally suspended in June after being charged with missing 4 anti-doping tests. However, the World Athletics Tribunal dismissed the charges against the 22-year-old in October. And that's about it for this edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Douglas. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. And it's Sunday on Nightline Africa. This is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent.
Pese wapi mikipofu kwa konsioni Pensi limetaradadi na pepewa Harufu ya marashi rashi nketachi tachi shingoni
vitu vya kuchuchumia kangaru kisema tuitanga weubani fukizia pambe tu ukizungushia shanga inashuka inapanya chini ju nishetafuna karanga asa chumba ndo kiwanda watoto tu yeah, yeah.
سنة وانت حبيبي مفيش حاجة نقولها واصلين لدرجة حب محدش في الدنيا وصلها أنا ليك وعمري ما كون يا حبيبي غير ليك روحي شغلها
ibada iye wasije kunyakuwa baadaye ukanibwaga.
That was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoyed the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, Managing Editor Shaka Sali, Reporter Douglas Mpuga, and Producer Saida Hamdoun, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, the best time to plant a tree is 20 years ago. The next best time is now. I'm your host, Peter Clotter in Washington. Good evening, Africa.